Thank you for joining us for another lesson from God's Word. The West Huntsville Church of Christ at Providence is located at 1519 Old Monrovia Road, Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Anytime you're in the Huntsville area, we hope you'll stop in and be part of our worship. Sunday morning worship is at 9 o'clock, with Bible class immediately following. Sunday evening worship is at 5. Midweek Bible study is held Wednesdays at 7.
We have come to the end of the discipleship road, or at least as far as this study is concerned. And where we find ourselves then is at the end of Jesus' life. His death is imminent, and his teaching of the apostles, preparing them for their ministry, is virtually complete. And so it was my thinking that when we arrive at this point, that it would be instructive to do a little bit of looking back, and do that specifically by looking at a case study of one of the apostles. And of course, it might seem obvious to you that the person to select for that would be the Apostle Peter. What we're going to do, or what I propose that we do, is look at some high points and some low points in the life of Peter as he struggled along the way on the discipleship road, some of the challenges that he faced, and see if there's not an opportunity maybe for us to learn a lesson or two by observing what Peter experienced. I actually believe there are several valuable lessons there, and one of the reasons that I think that is because of a passage that's very familiar to us, one found in Romans chapter 8 at verse 28. And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. And I suspect that if Peter were to read that, he would have to say amen to that, because things in the long run worked out very well for him. And God has assured us of his guidance, his protection, his care, not in every specific moment or event. Some things turn out to be challenging, and they turn out to be a catastrophe. But in the end, God has assured us that we will reach an end in our journey that will be one that's a blessing and a positive thing for us. Now, I do need to maybe say just a little bit of word as I launch into this. I've been experiencing this throat thing. You may sense here the graveliness in my voice. And so please try to overlook that if you would. As I say, I think there are some valuable lessons in looking at what Peter has to say, or rather, well, what he has to say, what he did. And we're going to begin that by looking at his call to discipleship. If we look in Luke chapter 5, where that call came, we read the beginning at verse 3 of Luke chapter 5. And if you would turn there with me at verse 3. Then he got into one of the boats, speaking of Jesus, of course, which was Simon's, and asked him to put out a little from the land. And he sat down and taught the multitudes from the boat. And when he had stopped speaking, he said to Simon, "Launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch." But Simon answered and said, "Master," he obviously knew Jesus' reputation, "we have toiled all night and caught nothing. Nevertheless, at your word, I will let down the net." And when they had done this, they caught a great number of fish, and their net was breaking. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both the boats so that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knee. And he, of course, is recognizing there's something special about Jesus. And he said, "Depart from me. I am a sinful man, O Lord." For he and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish which they had taken. And so also were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, "Do not be afraid. From now on, you will catch men." So when they had brought their boats to land, they forsook all and followed him. So Jesus calls Peter and the others to be fishers of men. Peter recognized, and that's a positive thing on his part, I think, that we can observe about Peter, that he was the Holy One of God, and he observed his own sinful conditions and recognized that before the Lord. And it says, when the Lord said, "Come with me, follow me, I'll make you those who catch men," they forsook all. So Peter had the wherewithal to leave his business and to follow after Jesus. Now later on, in the next chapter, as a matter of fact, Peter is referred to as a rock. So Jesus chose that name for him as some indication of the kind of person that Peter would become. Now let's look at some of the things. Well, I asked this question, I almost forgot. What did Jesus see in Peter when he fell down before him and said, "I'm a sinful man"? When he saw this simple fisherman, that he had to convince him to let down his nets on the other side of the boat. I would suggest to us that the same kinds of things that Jesus saw in Peter, he can see in us as well. So I think there's hope for us that the Lord sees in us something that can become of great value in the kingdom. Now, I want to look at some of the firsthand opportunities that Peter had. Now, I know that all of us, I suspect all of us, or nearly all of us, when we partake of the Lord's Supper, we often place ourselves at the very foot of the cross and imagine ourselves there. Have you ever imagined yourself to be a follower, a day-by-day follower of Jesus, to see what he's doing, follow him around the countryside firsthand, see his miracles, hear him teaching, hear the Sermon on the Mount? Well, of course, Peter had that opportunity along with the other apostles. Some of the things that Peter had the opportunity to do is to have a faith that was based upon hearing firsthand the very words of Jesus, seeing the depth and the majesty of his teaching. There's nothing more profound than the Sermon on the Mount. Or be amazed at his miracles, or see God's grace in action, displayed by the generous, compassionate spirit of Jesus, or be struck dumb by the very wisdom of the parables, such as the parable of the sower or the Good Samaritan and many others. He saw him heal with only a touch. He saw him touch Jairus' daughter, the woman on the way to healing Jairus' daughter. And it was simply the touch of his garment that healed her. He saw him raise Jairus' daughter to life. He saw this young girl, who had just moments before laid there lifeless before him, sit up and be alert and eat food. He saw Jesus feed the 5,000. He saw him pray many times. And in fact, of course, one of those occasions would be the time when they asked Jesus to teach them to pray. And indeed, he demonstrated to them that very thing. And of course, they heard the parables, things like the Good Samaritan, the sower, the parable of the sower, and heard not only the parable, but Jesus' explanation of the lesson that was behind all of this. But yet, when we start looking in some detail at the things that follow this, or consider some of the things that Peter experienced, just like those potholes that Tom spoke about in his lesson on the discipleship road, some of those potholes Peter became victim to as well. And I think it's worth considering some of those high moments and some of those low moments, and ask ourselves, how did that happen? What caused them? And I'd like to suggest three or four what I've called verbal highs and lows, some things that Peter said. And obviously the green represents what I consider positive, and the red as negative. In Luke chapter 9, we get to the point, and this is the beginning point, as I pointed out earlier, of the discipleship road. At verse 18, it starts out, "as it happened." And so those very words signal a shift in the narrative, and we observe that Jesus begins at that point to focus his attention on teaching the 12 apostles and going away from the crowd. And we see that pointed out in the next few verses. In verse 18 through 20, Jesus asked his apostles, "Who do the crowds say that I am?" And they, of course, said John the Baptizer, Elijah, so on. But then he said to them, "Who do you say that I am?" So we're seeing him shifting his emphasis from the crowds, I think, to focusing on these 12 men. And of course, the great confession that Peter made at that time was something that's familiar to all of us, and it's well recorded, it's well discussed, and sometimes debated in religious realms. But Peter's great confession, I would suggest, was a high moment. He confessed Jesus as the Christ of God. Then we don't have to go very far. And in fact, just a little bit further, if we have to turn over to Matthew and Mark's accounts, and we'll find that Jesus, right after this, begins to tell them on the first occasion that he was going to have to die, and he would be raised again. And you all remember, I'm sure, what Peter did at that time. He pulled Jesus aside, and he rebuked him for saying that. Now, I would consider that a red moment. That doesn't show up well at all, does it? But he rebuked Jesus for saying he must die. Peter thought he had a better idea. His plan was better than God's plan. Then, if we go on a little bit further, we find Jesus taking them on a mountaintop to pray. And what they witnessed there, or at least three of them, was the transfiguration. And again, unfortunately, Peter doesn't always say or do things in the most positive way. Now, what did he suggest when they awoke or were aroused by the conversation? He said, "We ought to build three tabernacles and honor Jesus, Moses, and Elijah." He's putting Moses and Elijah on the same level, on the same plane as Jesus the Lord. Surely a mistake on his part. So he really, in that occasion, failed to appreciate the Lord's greatness, the fact that he is, even though a short while before that he had said, "You are the Christ, the God." On this occasion, He failed to recognize that Jesus is a greater lawgiver than Moses. Jesus is a greater prophet and teacher than Elijah. And think about it, standing there on the mountain, observing these three men, two of them long dead, and hearing the voice of God saying, "Hear him." That truly, for Peter and for James and John, was a mountaintop, literally and spiritually as well, a mountaintop experience. They had been practically asleep, but somehow they woke up and were brought to life by the conversation. But again, Peter doesn't appreciate all of the circumstances that he's faced with there. Now, I want to stop at this point and and ask a question and maybe rest my voice a little bit. At this point, from what we've looked at, the few things, how do we judge Peter's performance overall as an apostle? What comments would you make or observe about Peter at this point? Yes, sir, Fred.
He understood that Jesus was the Christ, the Son of the living God, as Matthew puts it. That's not to say necessarily that he understood or perhaps even had an idea that Jesus was God manifested in the person of Jesus. I don't think any of the apostles understood that divinity occupied the body of Jesus. What they did understand was there was something immensely special about Jesus. And I think the two statements that you have highlighted red indicate that they most likely thought of Jesus as in the same way they would have thought of Moses or one of the Old Testament prophets, special, but not divine. I don't think they understood that yet. That's why in Mark 8, he made the mistake he did, perhaps, in wanting to build three tabernacles instead of recognizing Jesus as God.
Yeah. Brother Fred points out that perhaps these three, especially Peter, failed to really appreciate the depth of what he had said in saying Christ, the God, confessing that, and truly understanding that Jesus is God on earth, that he is God fully, and he also was a man fully as well. Sister Bonnie, and then back to Diane and you, Brother Glenn. How did he know that? Good question. How did Peter know to come to know at that point? Had he seen enough already? Yes, Diane.
Back to Luke 5, when we're talking about he didn't believe that Jesus could turn water into wine. And then there were no fish in that vision. So he was humble. He was even humbled by his own
sinfulness right at the very beginning. Yeah. I think Peter had seen enough in observing the miracles and hearing Jesus that he recognized here is someone special. Here is God, but he failed to really understand the depth, the true significance of all of that, particularly when you compare him to a very special man to the Jew, very special men, Elijah and Moses. I mean, they were truly, you know, in terms of the Jews, they were elevated in the sense of being men of great faith, great wisdom, and had a place of great significance in their history. Brother Glenn, you had a comment.
I think we see Peter at this point in his life just as an ordinary man. And like most of the apostles of that nation, you know, they've been in the presence of Jesus and seen all these things. They still have a lot of tendencies of the world in them. And fully, even when Christ is about to ascend back into heaven, they didn't fully still understand Jesus. You know, and until they received that help of the Christ and promised to them, I believe it was at that point that things of life come to them.
Yeah. Brother Glenn points out that, kind of like us human beings, he's still in the process of developing his understanding, and he's not there fully yet as to who Christ truly is. Brother Tony.
Just to amplify that a little bit, and it's hard to tell here, but you have to remember the Jews were looking for a Messiah. And in their minds, it was going to be somebody that came back to earth and restored Israel as an earthly
great kingdom.
They had. That's why I think. But when Jesus starts talking about how he was going to have to be sacrificed, that Peter took him aside and said, No, look, it's not going to happen to you. But he didn't understand this is not an earthly kingdom.
Yeah. Brother Tony points out, rightly so, that because of the common understanding among the Jews, it affected the Peter and the other apostles that the Messiah was to come back and establish an earthly kingdom. And that thinking perhaps is coloring all of that, all of this. And remember, in terms of the discipleship road, if you'll allow me to continue to use that term, they're still early. They're in the early parts of the road. So their faith is still, I don't know, it's somewhere down here, and they have yet for their faith to grow. It's growing and has grown to a respectable point, so to speak. He made that confession, but not yet there. Well, these are all some great observations. I appreciate that. And I do want to look also at what I have called physical highs and lows, and by that simply I mean some of Peter's actions that suggested maybe he still had some growing to do. Now, he made a bunch of verbal gaffes, and Peter, of course, we know by his reputation, he was always quick to wade in and say something, but he was also quick sometimes to jump in and do some things. And the first one that comes to mind, perhaps, is the walking on the water. Now, how much faith would it take for someone to just to step out of the boat in the middle of the lake? To me, that took a great deal of faith that Peter already had in Jesus. He said, "May I step out of the boat? Can I come to you?" He knew that he had to depend upon Jesus to do that. He had that understanding already. Brother Don.
Step out of the boat when he was in there in a storm.
Yeah, that's right. It was during a storm, so terrible situation all around him. Yeah. But then he started looking at that storm, and he started to sink. So that initial faith that he had in his Lord allowed himself to be distracted. And don't we have things that we allow to distract us from keeping our focus, our eyes on Jesus?
There it says,
I didn't catch the last part, Diane. I'm sorry.
Peter
faith. Yes. Yeah, and he demands a level of faith that keeps one's focus and mind and eyes on Jesus, doesn't it? Not one that allows itself to be distracted by the storms, if you will, of life that Peter allowed to distract him. So yes, faith is there, but Jesus at this moment called it little faith. It was not where it needed to be. Why do you doubt, Peter? As we go on from there, we look at another situation. That's when we get to the Last Supper, to the establishing of the Lord's Supper. You remember what Peter did when Jesus took up the towel and the bowl of water and said he was going to wash their feet. And he came to Peter, and Peter, I mean, I can imagine Peter physically pulling back and saying, no, no, you are not going to wash my feet. And I can see something positive in that. He is saying, in effect, you are such a great teacher. You are my Lord. You are not going to stoop yourself down to be a humble servant and wash my feet. But on the other hand, he's not submitting to what his Lord wants him to do, as we likewise are called to do. There's a couple of interesting things in the language here. In the original text, Peter asked the question, Lord, are you washing my feet? That should be, it's kind of like this, Lord, are you washing my feet? It would be said in our English somewhat like that. And as I said, I can even imagine, remember they're reclined around the table, feet behind them. I can imagine him pulling those feet back and saying, not so, Lord. But Jesus told him that later on he would understand. And sure enough, he did. His faith needed to grow just like all of ours does. As I say, on the surface, it seems like a noble gesture. But on the other hand, he is not submitting as Jesus calls upon he and us to submit. So he allowed pride, he allowed a failure to submit and be humble. And he didn't recognize or didn't appreciate Jesus' own humility that he was demonstrating to him how that he should behave. And then there's the cutting off of Malchus's ear. Again, Peter's deciding, I've got a better plan. This is not going to happen. And I'm not going to allow it to happen. Again, on the surface, it seems like a noble gesture. But again, he's in effect saying, God, got a better idea than yours. I think I'll do it my way. And of course, Jesus told him to put his sword away. But then we come to Pentecost. And that was a high moment for Peter, was it not? When he revealed, exposed, presented the keys of the kingdom. And he did so eloquently that 3,000 were baptized on that day. And the church continued to grow thereafter as they continued to preach. And then later on in Acts 10 and 11, he presented the gospel, the keys of the kingdom to the Gentiles. Brother Fred.
Just a observation about Luke 22 and verse 50. When I read the verses that discuss Malchus' ear being cut off, each time I read it, I wonder again, that all the other miracles that Jesus did, people saw. And the miracles made the impression that I believe was intended, which was to confirm the word Jesus was preaching. In the melee that night when they came to seize Jesus, I always wondered, because Bible is silent on it, I always wondered what the reaction was from people immediately around Malchus when he proclaimed that his ear had been restored and he was healed. I wonder if anybody noticed and were equally floored as well as he was when Jesus healed his ear. The Bible is silent on that, but I always wonder about that.
Yeah.
Isn't that the last miracle that was recorded?
Well, it's not the last miracle. No, there's another one that I want you to be on the lookout for as we get to near the end of his life. In fact, it's one he's already done. Remember the call to Peter when the boat was filled with fish, that it was so much it was about to sink? That same miracle is going to be repeated again. So these are some of the physical actions that we can observe in Peter's life. But of course, the one that's probably most familiar to most people is the three denials. And before we look at the denials in a little bit of detail about those, there's some things that we should think about. Now, each of the four, all four of the gospel accounts record this event. Now, they're different. They approach it from a slightly different angle or emphasize different things. But the outcome is the same in all of them. But leading up to that, there are some precursor events that we ought to take note of. Of course, the first is that Jesus predicted that this would happen. Back in Luke chapter 22, verses 31 through 35. So Jesus told him it was coming. And what did Peter say? Nah, ain't gonna happen. Never. I would rather go to prison or die than deny you. And the other apostles, they chimed in and said the same thing. So, in effect, in their own way, all of them denied Jesus because they deserted him when he was arrested. Also, leading up to this, as I've indicated, Peter asserted that he was willing to die. Now, also remember that following the establishment of the Lord's Supper, Jesus left and they went off to the garden, and that's where Jesus entered into that agonizing prayer to the Father. But even before that, at the time that Peter said, I would go to prison, rather go to prison and die than deny you. When Jesus went away to pray, he told the three that were with him there to watch and pray. And what did they do? They fell asleep, didn't they? Yeah, they fell asleep. Not a whole lot of watching, not a whole lot of praying. Now you wonder if Peter had stayed awake and he had prayed, would it have made any difference in the outcome? I don't know. That's one of those things you have to speculate about. But in Gethsemane, Jesus is setting before them the example of prayer, and he had told Peter and the apostles that they needed to watch and pray. And then we come to the event in the garden, the cutting off of Malchus's ear. And as Fred pointed out, you have to wonder what kind of impact did that have on the people standing around, were they all dumbfounded or did they even notice as it was happening perhaps so quickly? Well, Jesus is arrested. He's taken away for his 6 trials. And generally, the consensus is, well, probably Scripture indicates this, Peter or Judas is out of the picture. He's gone away. And the apostles, all of the other apostles, really scatter and are nowhere to be found. One of the interesting things to think about the Lord's Supper that Jesus established at that time, just before that, he spoke of Judas and his betrayal. And then after the establishing of the Lord's Supper, Peter, in effect, betrayed him. He rejected him. So the Lord's Supper is framed by these two terrible events of men rejecting the Savior. Now we, on the other hand, on the Lord's Supper, are called to remember with gratitude and acceptance this thing that happened when Jesus died. I'm going to have to watch out. I'm going to run out of time. The first denial, we get to the arrest, of course, and they all fled. And the first denial is basically, Peter is basically saying, I'm not one of those guys. This young woman approached him, and he denied basically being a disciple. And he does that with the second denial as well. This same young girl, slave, approaches him. In fact, she's going around telling everybody else, hey, that's one of the guys over there. He was with this Jesus. And at that time, Peter's denied it again, and he said, I do not know the man. He didn't even bother to name him. He just said, the man. That in itself is an insult, a neglect on the part of Peter to recognize and appreciate. Again, another denial in effect. And then the third denial, by the way, accompanying that second denial was an oath. And he had forgotten Jesus' teaching about oaths. Don't know what the oath was. But then in the third denial, he resorts to cursing. And in that one, if you look at the combination of Matthew and Mark's accounts, this matter of cursing and swearing. And again, I do not know this man of whom you speak. John's account, by the way, does go on and add that this third accuser was a relative of Malchus whose ear had been cut off. So you have to wonder if he may very well have been in the garden when Jesus was arrested and had eyewitness proof that Peter was indeed one of them. But nevertheless, Peter denied. Now, the remorse that followed. And of course, we know from Luke's account that Jesus turned when he was on trial and looked over at Peter. And Peter saw that and went out and wept bitterly. Now, this is one final word from Peter. And I think it's relevant because of what he wrote later on in 1 Peter 4 and verse 14. If you are reproached for the name of Christ, blessed are you, for the Spirit of glory and of God rest upon you. On their part, he is blasphemed, but on your part, he is glorified. I have to wonder when Peter the Spirit was inspiring him to write that. Was there in the back of his mind these 3 denials that he himself had done, had said? But notice in a verse or two after this, he goes on and writes, but let none of you suffer as a murderer, a thief, an evildoer, or as a busybody in other people's matters. Yet if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed. Peter had learned his lesson, hadn't he? He was certainly ashamed when he denied Jesus 3 times and no doubt afraid as well. So he had outgrown his shame, he had outgrown his fear, he had outgrown his remorse, and he had become a powerful, powerful weapon in the Lord's army. Some lessons for Peter, and the final bell has not rung, has it? Not yet? All right. Peter was a confessor of Jesus Christ and proclaimed him so. Some lessons we learn from Peter and we observe, beware and don't let pride cause you to trust in your own ideas. He had different ideas in the cutting off of Malchus' ear, in refusing to allow Jesus to wash his feet, and on the Mount of Transfiguration, he had the wrong idea. He had his own ideas. He thought his were better than God's plan. Then we get to the events in John chapter 21, when Jesus asked Peter 3 times, Peter, do you love me? And Peter 3 times said that he did love him. So love is the restoration force, the magic, if you will, the spiritual happening, the spiritual thing that brought restoration and forgiveness. Now, we can speculate often about why Peter would choose to go right in the middle of the fire and gather around the fire while Jesus was being on trial and deny him those 3 times. I was reading a rather interesting statement about this that Brother Marshall Keeble said. He said, Peter got into trouble by standing with the servants of the devil and warming at his fire. And we have to be careful that we don't allow ourselves to warm at the fire of the devil. Spiritual restoration. That's one of the great lessons we can learn from Peter. Peter went on to become what? He became an elder in the church. He became a great spiritual writer and author. And of course, he was a great preacher of the gospel on the day of Pentecost and other occasions. And he ultimately gave his life for his Lord. Truly a life that's worth living, but still, like all of us, ups and downs and challenges that fortunately God offers us. Christ offers us and gives us the very tools that we need to deal with those. We have this church body. We have one another. We have the Word. We have the providential care and provision of protection of Jesus Christ, all to help us on our own discipleship road.
We hope you have enjoyed this lesson from God's Word. If you would like to continue your study of New Testament Christianity, please send your name and address to World Bible School, West Huntsville Church of Christ, 1519 Old Monrovia Road, Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Or if you prefer, send your name and address by email to wbs@westhuntsville.org.